are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Get to people, yeah.
What are you gonna do?
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say, Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything is well for you today. Hope you had a great weekend. Hope you had a chance to do all the things you want to do, should do, must do, can do, and will do. And hope the weather was accommodating for you to do it. But of course, if it was not, and it had to get done, you got it done. And we're happy because of that. We're thankful. We have much gratitude for those who continue to do the work that is necessary. Those warriors I read about in the Inye Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought, which is directed towards our development of warriorhood, of our young men and young women who are committed to bringing into existence independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for African people. Ashe. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, 8 to 10 Pacific. Any other time around the world, if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. At the top of the page, you'll see podcasts. Click on that. The drop down, you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that. And then there will be programs that are dated and titled. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening Media. On Mondays, Monday evening, all times are going to give our Eastern times. From 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds Public Affairs programming out of Philadelphia with Brother Jihad Ahmed. And I apologize, you're going to be hearing these little bells, these pop-ups. I talk with my good brother, Brother Kwaku, and I'll try to rectify this by Wednesday. I pray and hope. I went to the taskbar, I went to all this stuff and all this madness. Still, they're anyway. From 6 to 8, from 8 to 9, from 8 p.m. to 9 p.m. on Monday this evening, Black Therapy Central with Dr. Mawia Kamban and Nataki Kamban. That is followed from 9 to 10 with Conversation, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey. On Tuesdays, from 8 to 10 on Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers. And then on Wednesdays, the Black Farmers Report on Wednesdays at 8 p.m. to 9. On Wednesday, 8 p.m. to 9, the Black Farmers Report. If it's Friday and it's and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Fridays at 8 p.m. Eastern time. You know, this is... because this messes up your train of thought. It just kicks. So I apologize and I appreciate your patience, family. Saturdays from 4 to 6 on Saturdays here on Time for an Awakening, Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers. And then at 7 p.m. on Saturdays from 7 to 9, the Sankofa Elders Council. And then once again on Sundays at 7 p.m. on Sundays, Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And last night's program with Dr. Cynthia McKinney was a good program. Good program, Brother Elliot. As always, man, you know, time for an awakening. And that's what time it is. We Buy Black. We Buy Black, the largest online marketplace for
African-American products that are produced by us is WeBuyBlack.com. Get everything you need from American African-owned businesses from WeBuyBlack.com. If you've seen it on your Facebook page, WeBuyBlack, they had, hey, Mama Nabantu, how you doing? And it's good to see you. I read from the Inye Sesim, one of your quotes, Mama Nabantu. How you doing, Mama Nabantu?
I'm here. Oh, I'm back.
Good. All right. Good to see you. Good to hear from you, dear. Just continue to hold. Thank you.
Yeah.
Baba Akima and Mama Nabantu, I read from their Inye Sesim quotes. But anyway, so where am I at? Oh, okay. We Buy Black. On Facebook, they've been talking about they'll give you free shipping with your purchases. I'm not sure the dollar amount of your purchases. Free shipping also, too. They're continuing to promote and to seek donations to establish a supermarket here in the metro Atlanta area. And, of course, from that point, other metro areas throughout the country where we are pretty much predominant and where we don't have a supermarket, which, of course, is a lot of places. Damn. Okay. Africa for the Africans. AfricaForTheAfricans.org. My good brother, Bamani Tahimba, who's been taking our people to the motherland for many years. And, of course, he has a trip upcoming to Tanzania. I may not be able to make this trip. I'll try. I was pretty confident I would, but some things came up that I got to attend to, and it's going to cost me some money because this trip is going to cost money. But Tanzania, November 18th through the 29th of this year is $3,700. And then December 24th to January 5th, 2022, to Ghana, $3,700. And then April 1st to April 11th, 2022, to Senegal and Gambia, it's $3,700. And then Ghana, May 24th to June 5th, May 24th to June 5th, 2022, once again, $3,700. Brothers and sisters, a $400 down payment. Pay on it as you can every other week or monthly or whatever. And then you'll be prepared for a trip of a lifetime. And everything you need is on the website of AfricanForTheAfricans.org. If you want to see videos of previous tours, go to YouTube.com/Bomani. If you want to see pictures, go to Facebook.com/Bomani. Or if you want to give my good brother a call, please do so at 404-931-9429. 404-931-9429. His email address is afta2010@msn.com. That's afta2010@msn.com. Brother Bamani Tahimba. Yes, sir. Baba Brinoco, he has a program coming up. And, of course, he's going to Kemet. He's going to Kemet. When is that? July 31st, the end of the month, to August 13th. And I'm going to be talking with him. Come and see if we can broadcast. I mean, he can call in from Kemet on the program, and we can have dialogue in that way. Let's see if we can make that happen. That would be cool. He has a program this weekend, this Friday and Saturday, Friday the 16th and Saturday the 17th, the African Image in Art, from Africa to Europe to the Americas, the African Image in Art. That's a Eventbrite program. So, and then he has another program on Monday the 19th. Monday the 19th, a special program on Monday the 19th, an interview. The Cedras and African People in India. He'll be talking with Pushington Obang of India in a conversation about the Africans in India. That's Baba Rinoco Rashidi. Habashaw Incorporated, habashawincorporated.org. abbotshawincorporated.org. Brothers and sisters, they are doing the work here in the States as well as on the continent of Africa in Ghana with the Kashi Project. Their programs are Habeshaw Works, which is pretty much sustainable agriculture, black to our roots, sustainable seeds and golden growers, and the urban green jobs, brothers and sisters. Check out HabeshawIncorporated.org. The Ledge Group. The Ledge Group, my good brothers and sisters from the Ledge Group. You know, they deal in the area of food, water, clothing, and shelter, the four basic things that are necessity to life. They have 12 projects in 6 different African countries, 172 people employed, and over 260 members. And, of course, they have a program, and I'm trying to figure out how we can work with them to deal with that program. They have a program upcoming this weekend, the Oyatunji Solar Workshop, the Oyatunji Sunji Solar Workshop. I'm not sure what time it is. I'm going to get that information. But join us to learn the principles of harnessing solar, water, and wind power. Instructed by the CEO of the Ledge Group, Brother Peter Brown and Brother Nkosi. And that is going to be from the Oyatunji Village in South Carolina, the Oyatunji Village. And the fee is $40, and the cash app, okay, and the contact. But he doesn't give the time. So I'm going to get that information, and I'll have that for you on Wednesday. The Ledge Group. Bibiatumi, A-B-I-B-I-T-U-M-I.com, Bibiatumi.com. They have a trip to Ghana, September 1st to September 12th, 2021. And I'm trying to find out exactly the cost of the trip, so I don't want to mention it because I've seen some prices that I'm not sure. So I'm not going to mention it until I get the exact amounts for this trip and to announce to you, and maybe you can beat the deadline. The deadline is the 15th, which, of course, is Thursday. Well, oh, man. Yeah, Thursday the 15th, but it's the Sankofa Journey. Explore Ghana before you move to Ghana. Yeah. The Discover Yourself, September 1st to the 12th. 2021 in Accra, Ghana. The Sankofa Journey is an African travel experience to help you discover yourself, your purpose, and change our world. Through intercontinental concerted effort, the Kambans, coordinated with traditional leaders in the community activists, special advocates, local citizens, vendors, business people, local restaurants, owners, and off the beaten path local operators to bring you the Sankofa Journey. That's going to be beautiful. The Sankofa Journey. I'm on the website, but like I said, it doesn't give me the information. But go to Bibiatumi, Abibiatumi.com. And of course, this Saturday at 1 p.m. Eastern, SKHA and the Liberation of the African Mind with Dr. Wade Nobles. Dr. Wade Nobles is a great grandson of Candace Agnes, an enslaved African born in 1810 on the Cook Farm or plantation in Edgefield, South Carolina. Baba Wade Nobles is the namesake of Agnes's oldest son, Wade. Born in 1836, who was also enslaved in South Carolina. Baba Wade Nobles is the co-founder and past president of the Association of Black Psychologists, the founder and former executive director of the Institute for the Advanced Study of Black Family, Life, and Culture. Professor Emeritus, He's retired in the Department of Econa Studies in San Francisco State University and one of the leading architects in the African-centered education movement. His professional career as a teacher, researcher, and academician, and scholar has been a consistent and formal engagement in the ongoing theoretical development and programmatic application of African psychology, African-centered thought, and cultural-grounded scholarship to address the liberation and restoration of the African mind and worldwide development of African people. He is a Pan-Africanist scholar and practitioner par excellence. Dr. Wade Noble, that is at 1 p.m. Brothers and sisters, go to bibiatumi.com so you can register for this upcoming event. Please. Okay. Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar, located in the West End, right across the street from Soul Veg. Wadada's, delicious smoothies and health drinks, and on weekends, on Saturday and Sunday, they offer vegan meals. So that's Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar, located on Ralph David Abernathy here in Atlanta. And the number to call is 404-444-1635. That's 404-444-1635. Mama Nia at the Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. She's doing well. Please check her out if you're in that area in the Greenbrier Mall at 404-436-3263. That's 404-436-3263. Another bookstore we promote, of course, is the Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore in Lithonia. That is east of Atlanta off of I-20. And Brother Kazim De Ajamu, who has a coffee bar, serves delicious Cameroon boil and other delicious African-flavored coffees and teas. And he also has other drinks, so check him out. But it's a bookstore. He sells books. He also has the red, black, and green shoes, NASCAR shoes. So Brother Kazim De Ajamu deserves your patronage. Give Brother Kazim De a call at 404-519-8107. That's 404-519-8107. The Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore. Because you know why? Because there is light in the Black Dot. Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa. Their Thursday night broadcast every Thursday night at 9 p.m. from 9 to 10 p.m. every Thursday night on Blog Talk Radio. That's blogtalkradio.com/ ULU. Us Lifting Us, Thursday night broadcast. And if you want to call to listen, you can do so. If you want to call to give a question, comment, or concern, you can definitely do that at 929-477-2789. That's 929-477-2789. Us Lifting Us. Sun Goddess Scents, your one-stop natural shop is Sun Goddess Scents, located at 4140 Jonesboro Road in Forest Park, Georgia, inside the International Discount Mall, booth 225. Brothers and sisters, Sun Goddess Scents, your one-stop natural shop. Give our sister Shelly Amundsen a call at 404-434-7963. That's 404-434-7963. Sanjay Dash Haiti, and we're going to talk about Haiti and in a minute. Sanjay Dash Haiti, my good sister, regardless of what's happening in Haiti, she's doing her thing in the northeastern portion of the island of Haiti, in the mountain areas with these beautiful children and families in that community. That is Sister Gabrielle Aurelia, and she deserves support. So please, brothers and sisters, go to Sanjay, S-O-N-J-E, dash, Haiti, A-Y-I-T-I.org. Sanjay-Haiti. Akabin Institute, Mama Ya and Baba Baruti, educating our young warriors, brothers and sisters. Please support them. I'm not even going to go with the cash piece, or the check piece. I'm going to go right to PayPal and Cash App. If you use Cash App, the dollar sign, Ya, Y-A-A, the letter M, and then Baruti, B-A-R-U-T-I, where you can make a donation one time or monthly. Sanjay, excuse me, Ackerman Institute. And of course, Baba Baruti is a prolific writer, and you can go to AckermanHouse.com for his many books, or 20-something books. Ackerman House, AckermanHouse.com. And I'm going to read from one of those books right now. That's right. That's right, brothers and sisters. From the Inye Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. July 11th. Every struggle, whether won or lost, strengthens us for the next to come. It is not good for people to have an easy life. They become weak and inefficient when they cease to struggle. Some need a series of defeats before developing the strength and courage to win a victory. Victorio. Just as keen chess players whose queen is threatened will retreat, they'll retreat her queen, but to a position from which to launch a better strike. A good warrior turns every retreat into a move to into a more effective attack. Irrepressible behavior is grounded in an enduring spirit of resilience, and if it is to be possessed by our warriors in training, it must be instilled. They must learn the art of victorious struggle in order to create a sovereign future for African people. That said, we have to ask ourselves why this is not what we see in our community today. If we can momentarily set our egos aside, the answer is simple. We have failed to develop the victorious genius our progeny needs to be resilient because the struggle components is missing from their socialization. And to hide our future, we have redefined what genius is to fit a weaker, more pacified, Urugu-friendly idea. In our fear, we have forgotten that for powerful, sighted people, there is no bar for warriors, only pegs for measuring progress. And obviously, we have forgotten who we are because choosing weakness has always been frowned upon in our community. It has been seen as undesirable, even among the confused. Now, though, it is being lauded as a point of pride, pun intended. Victory is an intergenerational process, and no matter how uncomfortable or threatening it may be to us or those who aim to destroy us, we must do the work necessary for our children and their children to do theirs. Affirm, through struggle, I hone my skills for the coming battles. Affirm, I hone my skills for the coming battles. July 12th. The fundamental challenge of the warrior is to bring to bear the power of spirit under circumstances of everyday living. Dwayne Smith. Warriors do not allow Urugu or the minions to waste your time. Keeping your opponent distracted is a proven very effective strategy of war. These various entertainments parading before us now are not accidental. There is clear political intent. This is part of Urugu's battle plan, and they do this with glee. Fully conscious of how to keep us blind to the genocidal moves against us, they are quite aware that they are warring against our survival and sanity. And they are very familiar with the material logic, which teaches that if you can keep your enemy misfocused away from you, you can gain even greater military advantages over them without expending any significant amount of resources or effort in doing so. Distractive thought and behavior tends to take on a life of its own, a life that progressively consumes more and more of the victim's time. This is a major issue for us, and it has reached a point where there are more irrelevant, dysfunctional diversions being attended to than real, productive, proven solutions. We need our warriors' total time and attention on the frontline agendas and missions. And there are more than enough activities and needs not being adequately addressed, which, having been left unattended, continue to progressively work to our disadvantage. Urugu knows this. In fact, they and their minions are responsible for manufacturing many of these distractions warriors get lost in. Affirm. Every day I focus on being a bear, the full power. I'm bringing the bear, the full power spirit against wrong. Affirm. Every day I focus on bringing to bear the full power of spirit against wrong. The Enye Sesem of daily revolutionary thought. To be truly liberated, African people must come to know the nature of European thought and behavior in order to understand the effort, the effect, in order to understand the effect the European has on our ability to think victoriously. This is what we talked about in Enye Sesem, the one before today's. To think victoriously. We must be able to separate our thoughts from Europeans' thoughts and so as to visualize a future that is not determined by Europeans. This is demanded by an African-centered view, because why? We are Africans. And because the future towards which the European leads us is genocide. Marimba Ani, my good sister and friend, Marimba Ani. We need to think victorious. We need to continue to put into our mind a visualization of us being independent, self-determining, liberated, and sovereign. We need to uphold the model of this program, Pan-Africanism or Perish, as the great Dr. John Henry Clark, Nana Clark, told us. Pan-Africanism or Perish. Unify or die. Brothers and sisters, it is imperative that we strive in that direction. This Wednesday, my good brother, Brother Molly Davis. Molly Davis, an attorney here in the Atlanta area. I met him through Dr. Conrad Worrell. He is Dr. Conrad Worrell's godson. Conrad Worrell and his father, good friends, Big Mel Davis, who also played for the Harlem Globetrotters. And Molly Davis is doing great work here in the Atlanta area. He is an attorney. Let me read this a little bit here. Molly Davis is an African-centered civil rights attorney and human rights organizer based here in Atlanta. For nearly 30 years, he has been involved in building coalitions, organizing protests, and training activists to support the African liberation movement. As an attorney, he has represented activists in the Occupy movement, Moro Monday, the Black Lives Matter movement. He has represented victims of police brutality and community members falsely accused of crimes. Molly Davis is the founding partner of Davis, Bozeman, and Johnson Law Firm, one of the largest American African-owned law firms here in the area. And he married his high school sweetheart, Sister Jana Johnson Davis. They have two sons, Kobe Jason and Kyrie Malcolm. And that's what this book is about. We need you. Encouraging my son's generation for African liberation. He will be my guest on Wednesday. I'm truly looking forward to this conversation with Brother Molly Davis, and hope that you will join us too. Molly Davis, good brother. Yeah. So, yeah, I'm not sure. I need to get more information about the Ledge piece. And of course, here's a piece. We're going to do a little thing on Haiti right now. And of course, this piece I'm going to play for you, because there's a conversation that's a little longer, and it's more, I think, I listened to it. I may play it again, maybe towards the weekend, maybe Friday. because it's good information if you really want to know. Brother Kwaku, another brother Kwaku, he just does an outstanding job. Young brother, you know. But they put this piece here too. This is a piece that was done prior. This is done prior to the assassination of the president of Haiti.
Major demonstrations continue to rock Haiti as protesters demand that U.S.-backed President Jovenel Moïse step down from office. On February 7th, his constitutional mandate to rule ended, but instead of holding new elections or stepping down, he's just staying put. For almost 2 years now, there have been daily mass protests demanding Moïse step down over extreme corruption, including the embezzlement of billions of dollars for social programs. These demonstrations have been met with severe violence, many times with the assistance of occupying United Nations troops. But while Haiti has drawn the attention of the world, it's a good time to revisit the history of not just how Moïse ended up in power, but how the American empire has determined the destiny of the Haitian people for generations. Haiti, once known as the crown jewel of the French Empire, was a center of the slave trade. But in 1791, an unprecedented slave revolution swept the island, driving out the French and then defeating the Spanish and British empires. During this war for liberation, America's noble founding fathers jumped into the fray. People like George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, and other slave-owning politicians rushed financial and political support to their slave-owning counterparts in Haiti. Against all empires, the Haitian people were victorious, and in 1804 established the first ever free Black Republic. In those early years of Haitian independence, the United States had barely started to become an empire. In the late 19th and 20th century, after completing the vicious colonization of native land from coast to coast, this baby empire took its first steps as a territorial empire. In 1915, U.S. Marines invaded Haiti. The first act of the invading Marines was to seize all the gold from Haitian banks and transfer it to the National City Bank of New York. All of Haiti's banks were put under the control of American banks. The United States announced that Haiti was now under the rule of a new constitution. A constitution written by Franklin D. Roosevelt, who, of course, was not Haitian. This new constitution allowed the purchase of Haitian land by foreign capitalists, which began immediately. But with revolution in their blood, the Haitian masses fought back against this new colonial rule. The most famous and beloved leader in the anti-occupation movement was Charlemagne Peralte. So the U.S. Marine Corps hunted down Peralte, executed him, tied his dead body to a door, and paraded it through the streets of Haiti for all to see. They had a photographer capture an image of the national hero's mutilated corpse, put it on a leaflet, and dropped thousands of them from airplanes all across the island. American rule of Haiti began with acts of sheer terrorism like this. The U.S. military occupied Haiti and ruled it as an outright colony for 20 years. But colonial rule gave way to neo-colonialism, where the United States installed total puppets, but with rigged elections so they could pretend to be supporters of democracy. But even that was short-lived. In the 1950s and the 30 years that followed, the United States gave up on the veneer of democracy and backed the brutal dictatorship of the Duvalier dynasty. This was total fascist rule. Suspension of elections, suspension of all political rights, no free press, thousands of political prisoners subject to brutal torture, and the use of assassinations and executions against activists and organizers, including massacres of entire villages identified as anti-Duvalier that entire time. The United States supported the dictatorship with aid and protection from U.S. Marines. In exchange, U.S. corporations were able to use Haiti as a sweatshop, with slave-like labor laws and free reign over its resources. Following the end of the U.S.-backed Duvalier dictatorship in 1986, the Haitian people have twice elected left-wing liberation theologian Jean Bertrand Aristide president. The first time was in 1990. But just 8 months after he took office and committed the crimes of things like raising the minimum wage from $1 a day to $2.50 a day, the CIA orchestrated a coup that removed him from power. During the coup, U.S.-backed forces massacred hundreds of unarmed Aristide supporters protesting the regime change operation. Washington installed a World Bank stooge in his place. But Aristide would return and win the presidential election again in the year 2000. He continued social reforms that made it harder for American corporations to use Haiti as the most destitute, hyper-exploited sweatshop possible. So in 2004, the CIA planned and executed another coup. U.S. Marines again invaded Haiti, kidnapped Aristide from his home, and took him out of the country.
Hold on a second. Hold on a second, please. President Aristide resigned. He has left his country. The Constitution of Haiti is working. It's the beginning of a new chapter in the country's history. Would urge the people of Haiti to reject violence, to give this break from the past a chance to work, and the United States is prepared to help. Thank you.
UN troops replaced American forces as political cover, and they remain until this day under the guise of providing aid. When I went to Haiti as a journalist in 2012, there were UN troops everywhere, patrolling streets and manning security towers. And for a country that's so rich in resources and receives billions of dollars in aid, the level of extreme poverty was shocking. Both the UN occupation and the economic catastrophe fuel the protest movement today. Aristide's ouster in 2004 began another era of rotating U.S. puppets ruling Haiti. In 2011, U.S.-backed candidate Michel Martelly came in third place in the election, but the United States, using its tool, the Organization of American States, installed him as president anyway. Current besieged president Jovenel Moïse is Michel Martelly's predecessor and close ally, appointed by him to be the presidential candidate in 2015. In an election with only 20% voter turnout, Moïse supposedly received 32% of the vote. However, an investigation by journalists at the Haiti Sentinel found that Moïse likely received just 6% of the vote. But despite clear evidence of fraud, he was declared president anyway. Today, he remains in office despite his term ending, given protection from Biden and the U.S. empire. And it seems Biden actually made the situation worse with his statement of support. See, just 24 hours after Biden made the official declaration that Moïse should be in power at least another year, the regime began a crackdown on opponents, even illegally jailing a Supreme Court justice who disagreed with his claim to power, and rounded up dozens of other dissidents, including journalists. With Washington's backing, the violent repression of demonstrations went into full swing. Ever since the U.S. empire invaded and occupied Haiti more than a century ago, it's had its boot on the neck of the Haitian people. Today, they're fighting for the right to stand up, and the world needs to stand with them, especially here in the U.S., which has been robbing them of the future they want for far too long.
Haiti. You know... Once again, this was made before the assassination of Moïse. And then the installation of more puppets, more neocolonial, more those who are sympathetic or will do the bidding of the West. These activities are so pathetic and they're so sad. In this day and age of communications, you could see years ago when you could do that. But because of mass communications and social networking, what you do right now at this very moment can be broadcast globally. This program is heard in on the continent by a few. It's heard in Europe by a few. It's heard in Korea by a few. I ain't saying I got no serious listenership. But you know, I don't, you know, yes, I want some listeners. But I want to be able to present the information for liberation for African people. I want to present the information that will put something on our minds to get us to think outside of the imposed boundaries that Europeans have placed upon us and to begin to think. But more importantly, begin to act in our best interest as African people, wherever we are, and call out without fear. And so this situation in Haiti is something that definitely needs to be discussed. Definitely needs to be discussed. On a Facebook piece, this came up. Sultan Mohiba, Pan-African Teaching and Spirituality of Africa. French President Emmanuel Macron said, with a family that has 7-8 children in Africa, even if you invest billions, nothing will change because the challenge of Africa is civilization. The Guinea sociologist Amadou Diagne, a professor at the Dang University of Conakry, answered him this way. Africans, thank you for your patience. This is, man, I tell you, I'm going to get this squared away. This is just so distracting. Man. Africans do not need your debauchery civilization, because your civilization, a man can sleep with a man. A woman can sleep with a woman. A single president can have two mistresses at the same time. A woman can sleep with her dog. A child can insult his father and mother without problem. A child can imprison his parents. With your civilization, when parents are getting older, they are taken to the retirement home. And finally, with your civilization, a young man can live with a woman who is his mother's age or his grandma's age without problem. Your case is a perfect illustration. Africa have no civilization lessons to receive from people like you. Africa is by far the richest continent in the world with its enormous mineral wealth. What is delaying this continent is the large-scale pillage. What is delaying this continent is the large-scale pillage of its resources by the so-called great powers like France. And France is in the lead. All the misery of Africa comes from this country that realizes its ambitions on the backs of Africans with the complacency of those traitors who do not hesitate to sacrifice entire generations by delivering their countries to the former colonizing power. They entrust all the key sectors of their economies to France. In reality, they lead the political strategy of vision desired by the former settlers. This contributes to the driving their populations into misery and extreme poverty. This is the cause of coup d'etat, civil wars, genocide, famines, and despots at the head of these countries that are kept in power by France because it meets all the requirements. And as you know, I'm reading this because France is at the heart of what's happening in Haiti. France. It is the French. It is the French. France is nothing without Africa. The day that African countries turn their backs on France, this country will plunge into chaos. As long as African countries do not abandon this domination of the former colonial power by taking charge of their own destiny, as the Asian countries have done, it will be very difficult for them to get out of the abyss. The challenge for Africa is to get rid of France, because the latter is not the solution to its underdevelopment. It is the heart of the problem. It was the heart of Haiti's problem. They punished Haiti because Haiti beat those entities in war. And their main objective is to make Haiti poor. Their main objective is to punish them consistently for decades, because they did not want a country in the hemisphere, in the Western Hemisphere, in the Caribbean, or anywhere near where European colonization was happening and European takeover of lands was happening, because they did not want that to be a rallying point, an example of what could possibly happen if we come together. If those brothers and sisters on the so-called plantation said, bump this, let's all come together and move on these people. So what if a number of us die? Let us die. Let us not, you know, what is that? If we must die, let it not be like hogs. No, it's a fight. It is a fight. It's a battle. And we, brothers and sisters, must do our part, whatever part that we're supposed to play in that fight, whether it is physical, mental, spiritual, meditative, whatever it is. We must fight. I mentioned to you Howard Nichols. Howard Nichols is a Caucasian on a piece that I seen on YouTube. It looked like a TED Talk, except I didn't see any of their logo or anything like that. But it, basically what it was, he's speaking to a group of people. And he's saying point blank, Africa must remain poor. Africa should never come together to control African resources. Africa must remain poor, because we need Africa's wealth. We need Africa's resources. If millions of Africans die, so what? As long as we continue to get these resources the way that we're getting them, that's our desire. That's what we must do. That's the mindset of the European. Go to YouTube and put in Howard Nichols and check it out for yourself. I'm looking at Brother Errol Hone here, and I before I go to the break, I want to, because Brother Errol Hone, with the Sovereign Psyche, he put a piece in that I really love. I mean, I think it's dynamic, you know. There is no other historical instance of a formerly enslaved people who valued integration with their former captors to the point where they completely abandoned the superior wealth of their own homeland. What a psych job. We fight tooth and damn nail to make these Caucasians, these saltines, accept us, please and beg, pray. We've abandoned who we are historically. We abandoned who we are culturally and accepted their way. And we say to you on this program on a consistent basis, their way is genocide. Their way leads to our death. Brothers and sisters, we're going to take a break. When we come back from the break, we have more discussion. You can join this conversation. 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. This is African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and Black Talk Radio Network. Jeez, I hate this. I'm so sorry, family. I really am. And I'm praying that this is done away with. Okay. We'll be right back.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Drums, please.
Slightly transformed, just a bit of a break from the norm. Just a little something to break the monotony of all that hardcore dance that has gotten to be a little bit out of control. It's cool to dance, but what about a groove that soothes and moves romance? Give me a soft, subtle mix, and if it ain't broke, then don't try to fix it. And think of the summers of the past, adjust the bass and let the alpine blast. Pop in my CD and let me run a rhyme, and put your car on cruise and lay back, cause it's summertime. And checking out the fellas to tell them who's best. Riding around in your Jeep or your Benzos, or in your Nissan sitting on Lorenzo's. Back in Philly, we be out in the park. A place called the Plateau is where everybody go. Guys out hunting and girls doing likewise. Honking at the honey in front of you with the light eyes. She turned around to see what you beeping at. It's like the summer's a natural aphrodisiac. And with a pen and pad, I compose this rhyme to hit you and to get you equipped for the summertime. Yeah, I got on sneaks, but I need a new pair, cause basketball courts in the summer got girls there. The temperature's about 88. Hop in the water plug, just for old time's sake. Break to your crib, change your clothes once more, cause you're invited to a barbecue to start at 4. Sitting with your friends, y'all reminisce about the days growing up and the first person you kiss. And as I think back, makes me wonder how the smell from a grill can spark off nostalgia. All the kids playing out front, little boys messing around with the girls playing double dutch. While the DJ spinning a tune as the old folks dance at your family reunion. Then 6 o'clock rolls around, you just finished wiping your car down. It's time to cruise, so you go to the summertime hangout, it looks like a car show. Everybody come looking real fine, fresh from the barbershop, apply from the beauty salon. Every moment frontin' and maxin', chillin' in the car, they spend all day waxin'. Leaning to the side, but you can't speed through 2 miles an hour, so everybody sees you. There's an air of love and of happiness, and this is the Fresh Prince's new definition of summer madness.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Summertime, Will Smith. And, of course, Cool in the Gang, Summer Madness. It's summertime. In some places, it is, whoa, hot. Out west, the temperatures, the fires. Here in the plains, in the midsection, floods. And man, I remember I did, when I was on Blog Talk Radio, I did a couple of programs on global warming or climate change or whatever you want to call it. And it's real, and it's happening. I've told this many times about how I read an article way back in the 80s about global warming. And what it stated is that if you do not make some necessary changes in behavior and what's happening, then these calamities will be real. Not only are they real, this situation is such to a such degree that it could possibly be permanent. That they messed it up so damn bad that it could not be changed. It's irreversible. Who knows? We'll see. Once again, this is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening Media. This evening, Mondays, from 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds, Public Affairs Programming with Brother Jihad Ahmed. And that's followed by Black Therapy Central with Dr. Mawia Kamban and Ataki Kamban from 8 to 9. And then from 9 to 10, Conversation Reparations for Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey. And then on Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10 on Tuesdays. And on Wednesdays, the Black Farmers Report on Wednesdays from 8 to 9. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m., it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. On Saturday, from 4 to 6, Sister Talk with Host Lawanda Chambers. And then at 7, from 7 to 9, the Sankofa Elders Council. And then on Sunday, once again, it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard at 7 p.m. And the number to call is 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. You know, I tell you, all this stuff is madness. And we don't have leadership. The religious leadership, of course, whether it's Islam or Christianity or whatever, is very accommodating to that powers that be, because number one, if it's Christian, it's tied to Europeans, okay? And if it's Islam, it's tied to Arabs, you know? And of course, Black Hebrew Israelites, more science and all these other theologies. Once again, I say what Malcolm said, Brother Omar Wally, El Haj Malik El Shabazz, or Malik El Shabazz. You don't have to always say that because you know El Haj, because that means just you went on Hajj. But he said, if I come to the table, that we must come to a table to discuss the issues that are affecting African people. Keep your religion in your back pocket, or leave that sugar, honey, iced tea at home. We have a serious problem. A serious problem. And I've said numerous times, I'll continue to say, one of the main problems is the theologies that have been imposed upon us that keeps us divided, that keeps us looking at each other side-eyed. Leave it alone. Man, critical race theory debate is about whitewashing the United States racist history. That's what it is about. And these people challenging it, they want to appear that these history lessons should be whitewashed. They should be looked at from the perspective of those who are in control. They should be looked at in a way that changes the narrative But we want to deal with the truth. They can't handle the truth. They can't. They thinking that this so-called critical race theory is an indoctrination, that you're going to be talking about how evil and how bad. Yeah, I know I will, because they are. They have been. They want to whitewash, Caucasianize the history. Read this piece right here. We get off into some conversation for those who are hanging on. Hang on a little bit. We just lived through four gruesome years of a president who spewed words of hate, often rooted in racism, on a regular basis and on a global stage. Many of those words also happened to be lies. Yet the Republican Party backed him every step of the way, citing the First Amendment, claiming that hate speech and dangerous lies should be fiercely protected under the disguise of free speech. Now, this same Republican Party has made it its mission to ban this country's educators from teaching students the actual truth about history. This isn't surprising, given Republic lawmakers' long history of promoting a whitewashed, misleading version of U.S. history in the country's schools. Trump himself created the 1776 Commission, a patriotic education organization that was meant to teach American exceptionalism to students and counter supposed left-wing indoctrinations in our school. He also signed an executive order that suspended federal training programs related to culture, race, diversity, and inclusion in the months before the American people told him, "You're fired." The Republican current crusade against teaching race and racism in school is part of the same tradition of erasing truth and amplifying fiction. Perhaps more importantly, it mirrors the type of dangerous, disturbing behavior of those history makers that the modern GOP fears discussing. If today we talk about the racist and Caucasian supremacists or Caucasian extremists of yesterday, then years from now, we'll be talking about the racist and Caucasian extremists of today, many of whom are the very same leaders trying to rewrite history. This year alone, 21 states have either banned, quote, critical race theory or CTR, or introduced legislation that moves in that direction. CTR is described as being a framework that considers race to be a social institutional construct that intended to keep American Africans and people of quote of color in the lower rungs of society, and that it has done, i.e. accurate descriptions of the past few centuries of captivity, Jim Crowism, redlining, the myriad of other forms of discrimination. One of the main targets of the Republicans' ire is journalist Nicole Hannah-Jones of the 1619 Project. And man, I didn't think that was that. I didn't think it was all of that. But anyway, published in the New York Times in 2019, the project commemorates the 400th anniversary of the first captives from Africa arriving here in what is now the United States. Her work went on to win a Pulitzer Prize in 2020, and its content has since been used to teach about captivity and its impacts in classrooms nationwide. But some schools have attempted to ban its teaching. And in May of this year, it was reported that Hannah-Jones' application for tenure at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill was denied after conservatives' criticism of her work. With that, the Pulitzer Prize winner became UNC's first night chair professor to be denied tenure by a board of trustees. And of course, if you don't know, now you know. They said, well, we messed up. You can have tenure. Come on. And well, she declined North Carolina. She and Ta-Nehisi Coates went to Howard University. She's taking her talents to Howard. According to the Associated Press, one of the school's major donors confirmed that he'd reached out to university administrators to voice his concern over her hiring, referring to her work as highly continuous and highly controversial. But Hannah Jones' work isn't the problem. The problem is the fact that for many Republicans, discussing captivity and systematic racism seems to be more highly contentious and highly controversial than the acts themselves. The GOP is yet again leaning into the culture wars, this time using decades-old material. Critical race theory is an academic framework which, according to NPR, National Public Radio, examines how race and racism functions in American institutions. Although it was developed by a group of legal scholars and activists in the 1970s to make sense of the role of systematic racism continue to play in the lives of American African people. And the concept is also directly related to the teachings of Du Bois, Fannie Lou Hamer. I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired. I know that's right. And Pauli Murray, civil rights attorney Derrick Bell, Harvard University's first American African tenured professor, Brother Derrick Bell, often referred to as the father of critical race theory, is credited with establishing the theory along with Alan Friedman, Richard Delgadillo, and Patricia Williams, Mari Mastra, and Kimberly Crenshaw. Critical race theory is a practice. It is an approach to grappling with a history of Caucasian, European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege that rejects the belief that what's in the past is in the past, and that the laws and systems that grow from that past are detached from it. Those who oppose the concept says teaching critical race theory teaches kids to hate America. Representative Steve Toth, a Republican from Texas, went so far as to invoke Martin Luther King in defending the bill he authored seeking to ban critical race theory. This bill is a direct reflection of the 1964 Civil Rights Act, he told the Yahoo News. It echoes Dr. King's wish that we should judge people on the content of their character and not the color of their skin. The thing is, CTR isn't designed to say that all white people are racist. It's the theory that seeks to interrogate the laws, regulations, court rulings, and other decisions powerful authorities made that led us to where we are now. It's looking at the institutions that held them up and the figures that set them down. Judging these history makers by the content of their character, it would be difficult not to conclude that some of them are racist. The proof is there. And in many cases, it's in black and white. That's the explicit racist language in the Federal Housing Authority's underwriting of the manual that led to the groundwork for redlining. The government-funded Kerner's Commission's document finding on the racial uprisings of the 1965 to 68 and the reality that American Africans were considered to be three-fifths of a person. There's also the obvious impact that the genocide of indigenous people and the captivity of American Africans has had on their descendants. The fear of teaching American students how to think critically about the concept. Of course, race is not real in reality. It is a human construct. It is not real. Race is not real. Europeans devised the concept and created the concept of race. Caucasians did that. White people did that. Europeans did that. Johann Blumenbach, Carol Linnaeus, and many others. They wanted to separate themselves and give themselves a top position in the hierarchy of, quote, race, with everybody else a lower position, with us as African people, the most dark-skinned people, at the very bottom. And because of them imposing that on the world, you see the whole damn world, you know, looking at people of color or darker hues in disparaging ways. They're at the low end. You name the damn country. If there are deeply melanated people there, they are at the bottom. And Europeans did it. See, Back then, they could do that, and they had control. But in today, because of all the information that you can receive, that's why, to me, once again, at the ASCAC meeting we had yesterday on Zoom, I pushed once again the two documentaries, and I said, ASCAC, number one, should check out Great Pyramid K, 2019. ASCAC has an organization, should check that out and really promote it. Also, to Exterminate All the Brutes, Raul Pex, the brother from Haiti. His documentary, Exterminate All the Brutes, should be watched by us. You get that on Great Pyramid K 2019 on YouTube, and Exterminate All the Brutes. Hopefully, if you can get it on streaming on HBO, you can watch all four episodes. They're about an hour apiece. The Great Pyramid K 2019 is about 3.5 hours long, but it's thorough and it's necessary. The fear of teaching American students how to think critically about culture is alarming. If merely thinking about the construct of race is so dangerous, the practice of enforcing political and systematic divisions based on that same construct is even more dangerous. Consider what these whitewashed, often false historical narratives have done to the psyches of non-Caucasian students. Some textbooks refer to enslaved people as immigrants or workers, many of whom were not unhappy with their place within the particular religious peculiar institution of captivity. Others teach students that Christopher Columbus discovered America, totally disregarding the millions of indigenous people who inhabited this land before him, a concept that truly baffled me as an elementary school student. Where's the outrage about the ways these false teachings hurt non-white students? Nevertheless, here we are, all of us, American, African, Caucasian, indigenous, Asian, descendants, inhabitants of a country whose history is deeply rooted in the practice of enforcing this construct of race. The U.S. that we live in today, with all its flaws, wouldn't be what it is without race. James Baldwin, writer and activist, once said, "I love America more than any other country in the world, and exactly for this reason. I insist on the right to criticize her perpetually." After all, how much can you truly love your country if, in the telling of its history and its story, you insist on leaving out the parts that truly define it? To love a fictional alliteration of your country is no patriotism at all. And it isn't. Give me a call at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. And the reason why I brought that back up, because you see it all the time. And I'm saying is that one of the problems is that we have, see, I don't give a damn what Europeans or this society uses words to describe us, or to, or words that mean and have multiple different meanings. But I hope that those of us who know better would begin to check those who don't. Like the word slavery. We should never call our ancestors slaves. We should all find a way, if you want to do it politely, to check a brother or sister. No, excuse me, we're not slaves, we're captives. A slave is somebody or something that submits its will to a master. We never submitted. We fought. Like, this country will not tell you about those who resisted. They'll tell you about people who are happy in their captivity. I didn't even learn about Frederick Douglass. You learned about Booker T. Washington and George Washington Carver. You definitely didn't learn about Harriet Tubman. And you sure in the hell wasn't going to learn about Nat Turner. Because they don't want you to know about those They don't want you to have an idea about resisting. They want you to be complacent. They want you to be complicit in what they have done. They want you to go along to get along. That's why words in this society need to be looked at. They need to be understood, and they need to be changed within us. I don't give a damn what the general society says it does, because they're definitely going to push that word slave on us. Went there and brought some slaves. Went there and get some slaves. There were slaves. No, God, we were not slaves. We were human beings. We were multi-talented human beings that came here and literally saved these people because of our knowledge. It's frustrating, I know. It really is. Let me take a caller. 646-646. Good afternoon. 646. All right. Nobody's there. If you want to have conversation, for those in the queue, hit star twice. Hit star twice. If you want to have conversation in the queue, hit star twice. 469-469. Good afternoon. Oh.
469. Hello, hey, yes. How you
doing? I'm well. Hold on, Jay. Yes, go ahead. 469.
Yeah. I'm doing tours down there in the Greenwood district. So,
Right on, Kev.
Yeah. I started doing that about 3 weeks ago.
Okay, good.
And it's really, really, really. It's really a real great thing. I love it, man. Mm-hmm. I love it. But you know, there that Greenwood Rising Museum,
yes,
across the street.
Yes.
There is still not open. It's supposed to be opening up sometime probably next month. But let me just kind of tell you what I did. They have a crew here, relatively young people. That's supposed to be here all week, and I guess they're going to be doing some filming and so forth.
Okay.
So I went there yesterday, and I saw them go in. I said, well, I didn't think that it was open. So I walked in, and I was there, young people, and, you know, they said they looked at me kind of strange.
Mm-hmm.
So one guy, because I've actually have gone to the same church where he is, but he's part of that 2021 Tulsa Race Commission, and which is not really. Let me just be frank. Mm-hmm. They're really sellouts.
Thank you.
You know, let's be frank. Mm-hmm. They're just sellouts. So I was sitting there, and the old guy looked at me. He said, "Well, who are you?" I said, "Well," I told him. I said, "You know, I'm a tour. I'm doing tour with the chamber." He said, "Oh, well, you know, people were looking at." So he said, "Oh, okay. Well, it's okay. You just sit here." Then the other guy, who was the lead for that commission, the project manager, I believe that's it. Guy by the name of Phil Armstrong, he came to me and he said, "Well, let me see if I can get it right. Well, who are you? This is a private meeting, and you know, people are wondering who you are." And so I say, "Look, if you feel uncomfortable, if they don't want me here, hey, I have no problem in leaving." "Well, yeah, you know, you know, because they're going to be filming, and, you know, this is a private meeting." You know, bunch of fags up in there, you know. And so, I've just got to call it the way it is, man.
Yeah, I hear you.
So I say, "Oh, no. And I say, no problem. So I left, and I just went. And I'm saying this is to say, you know, we have this separation. those people who are supposed to be quote unquote intelligent and intellectual, that's where our problem lies. You know, rather than all other groups of people, when their people become educated, which, you know, Carter Woodson, we know what education really is. Mm-hmm. It's a difference between being trained and being educated.
We've been trained.
But we've been trained. All of our people, what they do, they become more and more take on characteristics of, you know, of those people who oppress us. And you can tell because they don't sound like you. They sound real, mm-hmm. proper and prissy. And then they want to move out among those folk rather than taking the resources and moving back within the community and begin to develop and begin to take those people who are not, who are unlearned, and teach them and inspire them to the point to where they don't think that they can do things for themselves. They know what they can do for themselves. So I'm thinking about that, and then I know I've been kind of long, but I'm going to leave with this. Black Wall Street was created through segregation.
Right.
Things that were that we were forced to do. Mm-hmm. The next freedom movement must be we come together not because we're forced to do it by other people, it's because we want to do it. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Makes great sense to me. Because
once we
see, because
we,
now because
see, once we
see Kevin, see Kevin, because now we, after all that we know, all these many years and all this history, we know who we need to rely on, and it ain't this system, and it ain't them, it is us. We close ranks,
yeah.
we pull resources, and we begin to do for ourselves. That's where it's,
right.
That's where we must go. I agree.
Yeah. I'll close with this. Once we get to the point to where we love one another rather than despise being around one another and the poor and the unlearned or whatever you may want to call, then we'll be on our way. But if we think that we're going to change these folk to where we're going to be able to work with them and they're going to eventually, they're going to come around and treat us as equal, then I have some prime real estate that's 1 mile east, 1 mile east of Lakeshore Drive in Chicago that I want to sell you.
There you go.
So,
right there.
All right,
Lake
then. Well,
Michigan.
Look, like always, yeah, uh-huh. I'm going to also be sending you, eventually, I'll get around to it, the scenes from the Greenwood thing.
Okay.
That we were part of.
Yeah.
Okay.
Listen.
All right.
Listen, Kev.
Yes,
The money for Greenwood Rising, that museum, does any of that money go towards Greenwood, you know, that one block that's right in front of it for restoration? Does any of that money go to descendants of the brothers and sisters, or even those who are surviving, the three people, at least the three known people who have survived? Or what happens with that? Do you know?
I don't know. I'm going to find out a little bit more about it.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things, too, the president of the chamber, they're supposed to own those buildings down there, the remains of those buildings, you know, the only brick buildings. And I had to send them a nasty gram because I'm a tour guide, but some of the buildings, they have a museum in the back of one of those buildings, and I don't know if you went into that building or not, but it's a really good museum. I didn't know it even existed until about a couple of weeks before the centennial. Mm. Well, I'm a tour guide. They have not given me a badge. There's no uniform. The keys that I need to get into those buildings, I don't have. So I wrote them a letter over the weekend and basically, you know, raking them across the coals and told them, you know, hey, you know, we need that. But one of the things that they did tell me when I went over to the Greenwood Rising is the brother was telling me when I told him, you know, I was a tour guide, he's saying that they're supposed to all get together and talk about, you know, what is going to be done. But to answer your question, I can't say that for sure, but I doubt very seriously if any of that money is going to be, you know, they're, like everything else, some of those people who are the well-paid servants, they'll get paid okay. But as far as like the common everyday person, they won't. Because the people, the Negroes that's in leadership positions, they don't even like them and they don't want to be around them. So I doubt very seriously that they're going to do anything to empower the people and to make sure that those people, the descendants, are get anything. Now, DeMario Solomon Simmons, that lawyer,
right,
who is the lead lawyer for that lawsuit, that's what they're doing. And, you know, he has, they have a real issue with that 2021 Tulsa Race Commission. So if anything comes about, it will come from that direction and not the direction of the people who I had met with yesterday.
Okay. All right, Brother Kerr. Appreciate you, man.
All right, then.
All right. All right,
be strong, bro.
You too, brother. Peace to you, man.
All right.
All right.
Peace.
646, good afternoon.
Hey, Oshie, what's poppin', brother?
Hey, Jay, how are you?
Hey, listen, a new form of critical race theory is Mushmouth, Ben Crump, and Perm Daddy Al Sharpton chasing after white money, now defending and preaching and promoting the death of a salty. Now, that just goes to show you how the Negro has evolved into the piece of sugar, honey, iced tea that he is. But maybe it'll uplift their profile. You know what I mean? And make the cases of our people more permeate.
Well, who knows?
You know what I mean?
Who knows? But bottom line, but what that states is that we defend everybody. If you were wrongly done, particularly by police departments, which happens all the time because more Caucasians, police kill people every day. People are killed every day in this country by law enforcement. Every day. Literally thousands have been killed. Hundreds of us have been killed this year. Yes, we know about some of them. They've got the attention. They got the publicity. You know, they got Crump and Al. And so I guess in Crump and Al's mind and Lee Merritt's mind that, hey, if a Caucasian is done wrong and they don't have an attorney, we'll fight for them as well. You know?
Yeah.
I guess. Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just ridiculous. You know what I mean? They both, as far as I'm concerned, need the South African burning necktie. I mean, that they are.
Jay, you broke up on me. Say that again. You broke on me. After you said the South African burning necktie.
They both need the South African burning necktie. That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
That's what they need. You know what I mean? Because they, as the Bible would say, they traitors. That's what they are.
Yeah.
And the bottom line is, why we get treated the way we do, why we in the position we in, is because of individuals like that. That's all.
Yeah.
I mean, it is what it is. You can't get but so mad at it. You just have to, in a sense, see it for what it is. It's just like, you know, this, you know, madness that they have going on with this critical race theory. It's a joke, man. Because number one, it's not being taught. Number two, most people don't know what it is or smart enough to articulate it or to teach it that teaches. And number three, so what? What is it going to do? Systematically, you know, all it's doing is you exposing yourself for the racist that you are. It's for you trying to put forward a false equivalency to true history, and it's just going to backfire on you. Because what it does is it wakes people up to start questioning, and if they have any form of intelligence, to start seeking out what the truth really is. And once the truth comes out, how does it make you look good in the right light?
Well, see, the thing on
that's
that, Jay,
the thing that kills me.
Right. See, the thing on that, Jay, is that it's, you know, the debate whether this is true or that is true. What substantiates your truth? What substantiates mine? And basically, it's those who want to believe it. Those who want to deal with facts as opposed to fiction. Europeans want to deal with fiction. Once again, they can't handle the truth. They can't. They don't want to hear about how evil they have been. They don't want to hear about the founding fathers who were actually slave enslavers and evil, actually evil men who killed people and took their land and took their possession. They don't want to hear that. They want to believe in some romanticized fairy tale of some great wise men who wrote down great laws of justice and so forth. They don't want to hear the truth. And so, you know, therefore, they're coming at this situation saying that, oh, critical race theory is going to tell about how bad we can't tell our children how bad whites have been. We can't tell our children how, you know, evil they have been in taking land and so forth. I just mentioned early in the first half of the program dealing with the situation in Haiti, how the United States, along with Great Britain, along with Spain and so forth, once they the Haitian people threw off the yoke of these people, they vamped on them and made Haiti pay reparations. Because if you don't pay reparations, we're going to come in and we're going to, with the full force of the United States, Britain, and Spain, as well as France, and wipe y'all out. You know, if you heard the piece, they already talked about when they first came in, they took their gold. They took Haiti's gold.
And of course, everything from them,
man. Haiti's been poor. Only thing I remember as a kid about Haiti, they made golf balls, and they had some
they
other.
They still do.
They
and
still,
Levi jeans. Yeah. And Levi jeans.
Yeah. You know.
And that didn't stop with what's going on now. The factories that produce Levi jeans haven't stopped working. I bet you that much.
You know, and so, you know, these brothers and sisters, and of course, France. I read that piece about France, Mercon, talking about civilization. You know, once again, Jay, we and listeners, we're at a very critical stage of our situation, and yet we cling to hope and prayers and wishes of inclusion into Yorugu's madness, as opposed to saying, "Hey, let's step out, let's step back, let's look at this situation for what it is." And what has happened historically. That's, to me, where critical race theory comes in, is looking at all of this stuff from our perspective, from our point of view, from that, and then saying, I don't give a damn about how Caucasians feel about it. I care about how we look at our history and how critically we need to look at it so we can rid ourselves of the ignorance and come together to do for ourselves. They don't want that to happen. That's a critical thing. But say what, Jay? Hello? No, all of that broke up on me. If you want to call, you want to hang up and call back and try that again, because all of that broke up on me, man. I didn't understand anything. Can you hear me? I tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to hang you
up. Can you hear me,
Okay, that sounds better. was about to hang up.
Sorry about.
I was about to hang you up, brother. But go ahead.
Hey, listen. You know, the fact of the matter is, salty business is their business. It's not my business. I don't care about if the salt team survives on the planet or not. I mean, it'd be a better place if he was gone. I mean, it's just unfortunate that our people don't see it that way for whatever reason that is. But the fact of the matter is, white folks don't care about my survival.
Well, listen, if you look at what Europeans have done, and you look at...
And continue to do.
It's been to the detriment of this planet and humanity. The main cause of climate change or global warming was Europeans and the development of the Industrial Revolution, and continued to burn fossil fuels, continue to rape the society, continue to not pay attention to acid rain, all these things that they have done.
Stop right there, Oshie. Oshie, stop right there for 1 second. The thing that most people leave out is that the technology is available to make the necessary adjustments so that you could do the same things without burning the fossil fuels and all of the other elements that are destroying the system. You know, but they won't do it because of greed. That just goes to show their barbaric, sick nature. But nobody puts that on top of the argument that you just presented. They leave that part out, that there's alternatives to change the way that global, you know, climate is going.
Right.
I was talking to a friend of mine out on the coast, and he was telling me, man, he ain't never been in that type of heat.
Right.
He said he couldn't do nothing. He couldn't function at all. He had to stay within air condition, and it's just skyrocketed. He said there's people out there who don't have access to air conditioning, things of that nature, that are just totally suffering.
Yes. And it's going to keep
on.
It's going to keep on happening.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Well.
Oh, it's going to get worse.
And like I said, you know, when I read that article, which is now about 40 years ago, you know, it was the 80s, 40 years ago. And it said that if you don't do these things, then it'll get worse. And as a consequence, they didn't do them. I remember when Jimmy Carter left the White House in 1980, when Ronald Reagan came in, Jimmy Carter had put up solar panels on the White House. One of the first things that
Reagan took them down.
The first thing he did and contacted his oil folks. You know, to me, Ronald Reagan's one of the worst. I mean, they're all bad. All them, all these Caucasian.
Yeah, but he's at the top of the list of pure evil.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, now think about this. You, when it comes down to this right here, had to know certain things that the most of the public didn't know because you was a firefighter. So you was exposed to things that the average person really wasn't exposed to. Do you see how out in California, because of this weather, that lightning could cause the type of tragedy that's going on out there now with these fires in this triple digit heat? Imagine a firefighter trying to fight that type of element of fire and the madness that's in play. I mean, you know, it's not like we can't change this around. But the white man in his evil and deviant manner just doesn't want to do it.
No, and he's not going to do it. And to them, the bottom line is they don't care about each other. Because them, the bottom line is that as long as I got mine and me and this other clique of rich individuals and a Negro here or there, we're going to be fine. We're going to insulate ourselves. We're going to develop a security force. We may even put a bubble on our ass, you know, because the air
and
might.
And we're going to now go up to space and try
to
colonize space to the point to where as we'll be able to go back and forth, which is just a joke.
It's a
you
joke.
Know what I mean? That
it's
was
a waste
just
of damn time.
A display it's of a, wasted money.
Yeah,
that
for you to go up there
use
and have
to
a view.
Feed people and clothe people and house people and do all of the necessary things to just give people basic humanity. I mean, at some point in time, you know, it may not be in me and your lifetime, O, but at some point in time, you know it's going to change. You know they go, as they say, eat the rich.
Yeah.
You know, people are going to wake up and see what's happened and what's been happening, and they go eat the rich. They go after the rich.
Well, we'll see.
Like they have never seen before.
Yeah, we'll see. We don't know. No, we're not. But you can see trends and things that are moving in a direction. What I want to see moved in a direction is African people realizing that nobody's going to save us but us. And coming to that reality, we throw off all the ignorance and all the superstition, all these religions, all this bull, and we close ranks. We come together. And we
go in the mouths. Yep. I mean, what would the white man save us anyway? What would be his purpose to save us with the intellect and the intelligence that we have on a certain level to whereas he couldn't totally enslave us like he did before? Even though he has enslaved us to the point to whereas we don't know our ass from our elbow in regards to how we're moving forward as a people. But the point of the matter is, when are we going to wake up and see him for what he really is?
Right.
You know, it's like the good... I never liked the theory of the good white folks. There are no good white folks. No, I don't even want to hear that. That sugar honey
when
I
you,
see.
When you
there
said
are
that,
no good white folks.
When you said that, reminds me of Phil Donahue's show. The one he had a panel discussion with Dhruba Ben-Wahan and Sister Soulja against
Sister
the Negroes.
Soulja, yeah.
And that was, in fact, honestly, it was one of the first times I had seen and heard Cornel West, you know, and Sharon Pratt Dixon, the mayor, the former mayor of D.C., and some others on the panel. When you said that, I could still see Sister Soulja's.
Hold on.
I could still see Sister Soulja's face saying, "Good white people, where are these people? I want to meet them." Where are these
people? Let me tell you, Oshi. at that time when she did that, we were hanging out. I know the sister well. I was part of the organization and everything. And what y'all saw on TV was nothing compared to being in the room as a collective group, educating one another and learning our culture and our history and all of that. Like, I at that time, I got a chance to meet all of them. I got a chance to meet Farrakhan, Khalid, Ben Chavis. Indirectly, I know all of them, I've met all of them.
Right.
And I can honestly tell you in all truthfulness that they ain't sugar honey iced tea. They the reason, to be honest with you, why she never was able to elevate to a level to whereas she would have been able to really educate sisters.
Oh, she was dynamic.
In a better position and all of that.
Yeah.
See, it boils down to this, and I know this for a fact because I was there. When Bill Clinton attacked her, all of those so-called leaders told her to chill. They'll take care of it. And at that point in time, they basically sold her out. Man, she had one press conference.
Well, listen,
and if you ever see that press conference, you'll really see how dynamic she was.
Yeah.
And if she would have been able to challenge Bill Clinton, we wouldn't have never had the battle in our midst.
But see, what happened was Jesse and all those other Negroes shielded Clinton from her. That's what happened. But I gotta run. I appreciate it, Jay, and all the other listeners, all the brothers and sisters. My time is up. Hotep. Shem Hotep. Go in peace. Brothers and sisters, I thank you for calling in. I thank you for listening. We end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure in hell don't want to pay for it. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Once again, my guest this Wednesday will be Molly Davis, attorney Molly Davis, in his new book, We Need You, Encouraging My Son's Generation for Black Liberation. It's going to be a good conversation. Hope you can join us on Wednesday. Shemhotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Bivihodie. Bivihodie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. Peace, family.